Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Stone Graphics. Well, we got our show for you folks tonight. Good grief. We got Kyle Gibson from Washington State, and I tell you, this guy's fantastic. I met the gentleman when we was up at Kennewick. We went out there to the conference there, and me and Kyle had I had taken. Mind of its own, I guess. Kyle had taken me out up on the Yakima River down at Kennewick, and wow, shoulders everywhere. We found one footprint, so I can add that to one of my states as research. But I wanted to either introduce everybody to Kyle tonight. This is his show, and it's about him and his adventures. Kyle, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you doing, Steve?
Excellent, excellent. If you would, let's just jump right into this bold feat, if you would. Could you tell us a little bit about, first of all, where you live and how close you are to the Blue Mountains up there?
I live about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from the Blue Mountains. I live over here along the Columbia River, where the Columbia River meets the Yakima River. And we're about 2 hours away from the Blue Mountains. I live probably about a mile away from the river.
But, you know, I really don't think you really need to go, if you live in that area, to go all the way to the Blue Mountains just to do research. I mean, you showed me areas there along on the Yakima that people don't even realize.
They don't.
There. Do you agree with that?
Yep. Yes, yep. Most people don't know. How I know is I grew up playing there as a kid. My grandmother lived just above there, and as I was a kid, there was no roads running through there. We had a little two-lane road back then, and so we always played along the river all the time, and so we fished and hunted, and, you know, we set crawdad traps, and we'd spend a lot of time, you know, out at night fishing for catfish, and that's how I came upon them.
That's fantastic. I couldn't believe the activity was around there. My God. Those shelters were very, very unique. I can imagine in the wintertime, if you put leaves over top of that, it looked like a rich aboriginal hut, if you will. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, when you got inside and stayed, you're a pretty tall guy. You got inside that, stood up, and, I mean, it was huge.
Yeah, it's so amazing how quickly they're built, too, because 1 week they can be down there in that one area, and then the next week they could be 2 miles upriver into a different area, and they'll happen overnight. I mean, they'll build those overnight, which is just mind-blowing. I just don't know how they do it.
Well, I've run across shelters like that myself, and I fully understand.
I'm a terrible carpenter. If I tried to build one of those, it'd probably fall down after 5 minutes. My wife says, don't ever do carpentry.
Yeah, I would say they know what the heck they're doing. You know, living out in the forest like that all their lives and everything. These wild men, they fascinate the heck out of me, especially the way they live and everything. It's just fantastic. Jeff Rohn just logged in in the chat room, so we're going to welcome him. Of course, I met him, and I'm sure you met Jeff Rohn.
Oh, yeah, great guy. Yep, I really enjoyed meeting with him.
Yeah, I'll give him a phone number. Maybe he'll call in and talk to us.
You know, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
You never know. I'll post it in here. But if you would, could you tell us real quick about what your first encounter and what got you started in this?
Well, I started when I was really young. My grandfather and I, we did a lot of hunting and fishing, so we spent a lot of time outdoors, you know, tacking into places, camping, campfires, learning the land, learning, you know, where the fish go, where they migrate, hunting different areas, and just loved being outside so much that it just became an addiction. You know, every time we weren't working, we were up in the mountains, or we were on a lake, we were fishing, we were always doing stuff. And you know, I was younger. Me and my grandfather used to talk about this subject because he was pretty fascinated by it, because he had seen one out hunting when he was younger. And it just, you know, kind of caught on to us. And, you know, the more you're outside, the more you realize, you get so used to the area that you know where things are. And when you go into these areas at certain times of year, you always know, you know, what kind of foliage there is, what kind of animals have been in there, you know, where the tracks, you know, what's been coming down to the river, you know, what time the animals come and feed, and you learn all that stuff. And then, you know, through the years, you start picking up on little things. You start picking up on things that are kind of out of place, that usually are not that way.
Yeah. You know, that blows me away, because, you know, when I was down there, people was just spread out, partner. Let me tell you, it's a big, big, huge area, over 500,000 people, and these beings are walking right there alongside them, and people don't even realize it.
I know. It's kind of funny. I always tell people, it's like when you're driving down the freeway and you see your friend that's in the same lane, he's right next to you, but he's so focused on what he has to do next in his life that they just drive right past you. You can honk your horn, yell out the window at them, but they just drive right past you, not even know you're there.
By the way, we just got Jeff on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys.
How are you doing?
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, hey, Steve. Hey, Kyle. Doing good. Just got home early, just in time to log in and catch you guys.
All right.
Glad to hear you. I know. We got so much stuff that's been going on. You know, we had taken a train out there to Kennewick, and we met a lot of folks, and Jeff was one of them. Jeff, did you get a chance to read her book?
I read the book he gave me, and it was awesome. Loved it.
Good. The biggest thing that I try to do is return the show over to the gentleman that, of course, Carl, and this is his show. He's been telling some very interesting stories. You're from that area as well, so if you two will kind of fill us in on how the area is, like, is it a humid area? Is it a dry area? Is there a lot of trees? You know, what areas do you go to do research? I know Kyle is telling us that, you know, the Blue Mountains is 2.5 hour and a half away or whatever, and I'm going to get into that with him. I want to see if he goes up in that area and does research, you know. So, Kyle, if you would, fill us in a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Blue Mountains are a very, very awesome place. There's a lot of land up there it goes all the way through Washington, down to Oregon, and on through. There's a lot of area up there that people don't even do a lot in. I mean, during hunting season and stuff, depending on the areas, you know, they have certain areas that they'll hunt. And most people will stick in the same areas, but there's a lot of land up there that people don't travel in too much either.
Mm-hmm. Now, is an area that is so secluded that some, let's put it this way, that some white men have never been to? Do you think that is possible?
I'm sure that there is possibilities. There's the thing is, they have a watershed over here and it's outside of the Dayton area, and it goes all the way down to Walla Walla. and it's federal land. And what it is it's you're not supposed to go in there. It's basically the source of water for this area. They keep it blocked off, so they only allow so many tags a year to go to get your deer or get an elk out of there, and it's not very many. And it's like winning the lotto to get one to go in there to hunt. But people stay out of that area, and it's a very hot spot for them to travel because pretty much all year long, nobody really goes in there. It's a lot of area. It's real steep and rugged. It's real thick, dense forest. It's a great place. I mean, it's a great place.
That's fantastic. Jeff, tell us a little bit about the area that you go to.
Okay, yeah. I'm about 3 hours from where Kyle is, I believe. I'm more in the western part of I'm closer to Portland to Vancouver. I recently moved out by Yakult, Washington. So I got this new area out here to explore. I originally started exploring an area out past Estacada, Oregon, near Bagby Hot Springs, and found my first tracks out there in about 2009, and had a lot of encounters out there. Never had a real visual out there, but all kinds of weird stuff happening out that direction. And so I've been in Yakult for about a year, and I just was able to go out exploring last weekend with a few friends of mine, Sean Fay, Lisa Devereaux Cruz, and Jim Demain, came out here. We went to this area called Canyon Creek, where a couple of years ago, a 19-year-old young lady went missing and just completely disappeared. So we went to visit that campground, and we all had a really negative feeling there, and we just wanted to get the heck out of there. So we drove down some Forest Service roads and went and explored. So I'm kind of covering some new territory out here.
That's fantastic. Oh, Wood, could you tell us about your first encounter? Kyle?
Yeah, you kind of broke up there. What was that, please?
Could you tell us about your first encounter?
Well, my first encounter happened when I was a young kid. It happened up in the Blue Mountain area. And I was bow hunting, and it was, it was around August, first of bow season, up in this area above the Toucannon area, which is a very popular area. In fact, it's one of our favorite spots that me and Tom Cantrell like to go visit, and a lot of people go up there. It's got several lakes up there that they stock full of rainbow trout. And there's a huge population of deer up there. And
wow.
They travel in and out of there. They'll come down at night, and when people catch the fish, a lot of times they'll let them go, and the trout will float to the surface. And so there'll be dead trout along the sides. And then so at night, they come down for the food while everybody's, asleep in their tents or, camping or whatever. They can come down to the lakes and get the food, and then head back up into the mountains before daybreak. But when I was bow hunting, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and at first I thought it was a bear because you see something like that, first thing you think of, because of the hair and everything, you think bear. But then it walked across the ravine. Once it walked across the ravine on two legs, I kind of had to sit there for a minute. I was such shocked that it took my brain a few minutes to figure out what I was seeing. And it actually scared the daylights out of me. When you first encounter one, it kind of burns in your mind for a very long time because it's something that the human body is not used to ever seeing, I mean, it's different when you go see a animal in the wild, like an elk or a deer or a bear or something. But when you see something like that that's very similar to us but much bigger and stronger, then that really puts some fear in your mind because you don't know what it's capable of. You don't know what it's capable of.
I've always said this, and I want to see if anytime that you have a first, always go into shock. Hours later, there's two things that have to be denial before, oh my God, I've been blessed. Right? Yeah, and I know that was real. You know what I'm saying? Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, I totally agree with that.
What about you, Jeff? Jeff?
You want to hear about, like...
Well, do you agree with... Guys, it's fascinating when you sit around and talk about a myth. That thing we know is real. And I've always told people, you know, you have it has to have to first believe. Do you agree with that statement? Kyle?
Yes, I do. I agree with that statement. You know, after you have that sighting, and after it's over, and you start really thinking about it, you get more and more. At first, it scares you, but then it kind of brings something out of you that an interest that you really want to know more. You really have to know more. You know,
I always call that the wild side. You know, it gets in your blood, and you got an itch, and you got to scratch it.
Right. Through the years after that happens, then I started really paying attention more, because at first I'd always think, oh, it's a deer or, you know, a bear or whatever it may be. But the more time you're out there, the more you pay attention to your surroundings, and you start seeing things that normally wouldn't be there. You're looking for things out of place, you know, just like tracking an animal. You know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, let me ask you this. Ask Jeff. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever had a mentor? Or have you learned on your own?
Oh, have I ever had a mentor?
We get involved, and there's always somebody out there who wants to help you right along. And that's what I'm asking. Has anybody helped you? Found anybody that knows and is going to help you learn a little bit more about the force?
Yeah. Arla Collette Williams, Tom Cantrell, Tom Powell, Joe Bielard. I've been lucky to have a lot of people nearby me that I was able to meet and go camping with and glean a lot of information. Autum Williams, her mom Sally, learned a lot from them. And then you go out and do your own thing, and you kind of sort of file things away, what people tell you and the things that you learn from other people's experiences. And then you go out there and you just start looking for things or let things happen to you. And you, with discernment, you start realizing, okay, this experience was something special. What I mean is, like, when I first would go out by myself or with a small group of people, everything is Bigfoot. Oh, look at that bark fell off a tree. A Bigfoot did that. And after a while, it's like, okay, whoa, guys, hold on. Not everything's Bigfoot, settle down, and then you start just letting things come to you. And anyway, I've had a lot of weird paranormal type stuff happen to me, so you may want me to talk on a different type of show instead of this one. But when things happen or you see things, it does take a while for things to settle in your mind. Like, it took me about 3 years to really admit that certain things happened to me when I went camping with a group of friends in Idaho. And it took 3 years for me to, like, admit that it really did happen. And so now I can openly talk about it now. And I think I may have told you a few things, Steve, when I saw you in Kennewick.
What about you, Kyle? Could you tell us a little bit about
the mentor? Tom Cantrell is a very good close friend of mine, and how this started with me kind of, I've been doing this my whole life without networking with other people. And a few years ago, it was about, 5 years ago, they had a conference come to Richland for the first time. And I thought, my wife told me, she's like, you should go to that conference. And I said, okay. And I didn't realize there was so many people that were into this, because I've always done this by myself. I've never had different people. And so when I went to this thing, I ended up meeting Tom, because Tom was local here. And the more I started just talking with him, kind of talking back and forth with him, he could understand what I was talking about, because he knew a lot of the stuff. In fact, he said some stuff to me that nobody could ever say to me. I mean, most people here will look at you and kind of laugh at you. Bigfoot, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You know, so you kind of keep things to yourself, you know. And Tom brought up some things to me, and I was shocked that he knew what he knew, because it's not something that I would tell everybody. But he knew,
that you've held in your mind for many years, and it probably felt good to let it out and have those experiences confirmed. I've done that for many times. I've had people that I've mentored. I don't like to call myself a mentor. I always try to stumble and, you know, figure that, hey, if us start getting a big ego, you know, we're in trouble.
Trouble.
And that's the reason a lot of people haven't heard of me. Now, our radio shows, I've been 9 years now. Got over 148 episodes or sessions on one show. I've had other shows that had well over 100 episodes, and that's been erased from our archives somehow. We can't figure that out. But right now we're running 149 episodes. And, it's a great pleasure that you guys called in, because I've been wanting to talk to you ever since we've had that Tom Cadrall used to be my co-host for a couple of years, matter of fact, and he was surprised that I knew some of that happened. People got lit. I keep telling people, you have to experience it and live it, and it has to be in your heart. This stuff gets in your blood, but you got to experience it with your heart and an open mind and lose that total fear. That's what I
think. And the thing is, you know, at first you go out and you search really hard, and you're looking, and you find nothing. And that's how it works. You find nothing. But as soon as you go
and then all of a sudden
stuff,
you just sit back, let them come to you, and boom, there they are.
Yeah. See, I've always related, because, you know, fishing down there, what they did is they watched me as a child. They watched me as a child going down there, and they knew that I wasn't any kind of threat, because I'd go down there, I'd catch my fish. But it's funny, because I'd always leave a fish behind, because when I was down there, before I'd come home at night, I'd always felt like I was being watched, or somebody was following me. And so I thought, well, could be an animal or something, so I'm going to leave it a fish behind. So I'd leave an extra fish behind, you know, one of the smallmouth I'd catch, or some crawdads. I'd leave them in a little pile. And sure enough, come back the next day to go to my fishing hole, and they were gone. And I kept doing that all the time, and I did it for years. And like Tom said, you know, he said they knew me, you know, from spending all that time down there, and they knew that I loved to fish, and I wasn't any kind of harm or threat to them, so they accepted me.
I like that. I used to fish in ponds on private property, and what that private property was an overgrown Christmas tree farm, and you couldn't see through it. I mean, it was so thick. You can move a branch versus Sasquatch, and you're watching. I mean, that's how thick it was. We would fish, and I would go back and hang the fish on a tree behind me, back and throw my water line back in the water, fishing around, and the fish was gone. I heard nothing. I saw nothing. But I knew who got it. You know, I find that amazing. So, you know, these forest people, man, they love to eat that fish. I'm here to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if it's handout. Now, here's your thought. I really fooled this guy, and that was fun. He don't know what's going on. So that's what they do. They think they're playing a joke on you. They love to play jokes.
Right, but after years, you pick up on those things. Those are the things that I was telling you about. At first, you don't really think about those things, and then you start putting those puzzle pieces together, and then it starts to come together, and the more you do that, that's how you interact with them on different, and there's different ways of doing it.
Jeff, have you ever had any experiences like that? They would take your food?
I've asked that question again. Have I had any experiences what?
Yeah, I said, have you ever run across where they would steal your food? You didn't realize it?
Yeah, there must be some background noise. I couldn't get the second half of that question.
Okay. Yeah, I said, have you ever experienced food missing? You didn't realize until later, and you wondered where it went to. You ever run across anything like that?
Nothing quite like that, no.
Okay. Well, I've run across that many times when I was out in the field. Now, I used to take graham crackers. They love graham crackers.
Oh, yeah.
The honey graham crackers. I did. Not the kind of sugar on it. And the cinnamon.
Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you what. You made a friend for life. I did that for a year with a juvenile. And he stepped out on me a year later. Right out in broad daylight. I caught him reaching for the keys. You know, I find that amazing how they like human. Have you ever run across anything like that? Oh, they like to play jokes on you?
Oh, yeah, they do it all the time. At my place up by the, up above Grand Coulee Dam, I'm up right across from the Colville Indian Reservation. That's where I live on the weekends, and I have a nice campsite set up there with a nice deck, and I'm perched up against these big terrace cliffs. And what they do up there is I learn to play this little game. I collect all these arrowheads and these interesting rocks when I'm down fishing. I'll collect these things, and I put them on the arm rail of the porch. And what I'll do is every day when I'm up there, I will change those rocks and I will make little shapes like mountains and rivers with the rocks, and I'll make little scenes with the rocks, different shapes and stuff. And then when I go to sleep at night, and then the next morning I'll wake up and they'll take that and then they'll mix it all around and they'll do different things with it. And it's funny because they'll come about 2 o'clock in the morning. And you can hear them because you can hear the heavy feet. They'll actually play with the doorknob on my camper. They play with that doorknob off and on. In fact, I had my good friend Lori Simons up there with me. And I told her, I said, just wait at night, because she was out in the living room sleeping. I said, just wait at night when you hear that door start moving around. She'll be outside. And sure enough, she says the next morning to me, she says, Kyle, she goes, you weren't kidding, that thing went up playing with that door all night. Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, it's funny,
yeah.
Kyle, because when I was talking to other people, you remember you met Kathy Blanc?
Yes, yep.
She went to dinner with us and everything with us.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Gimlin.
Yeah.
You know, he had made the comment to me, you know, that Kyle is a gentleman. And my wife wants your cowboy hat, by the way. She loved that cowboy hat. Of course, she had to hug Bob Gimlin, you know. great.
Oh yeah, everybody's got to hug Bob.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's a great hugger.
Yeah.
He's something else. I love that old man. You talk about a perfect gentleman. But Kathy is one of my best friends out there. Oregon's where she's at now. She used to live up in, right above Seattle, right in there. But Kathy is one fantastic person. Love her to death. There's the book that she wrote. If you read it, it talks about Odie One in her book.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually me. So if you read the story, you'll be fascinated. Fascinating book out. And a very, very great person. But I'm the one that's called Odie One. She didn't name me by my name. we've had a good time. But let's get back to it real quick, if you will. As you know, I interviewed hundreds of people in the last 9 years of the CEO show. And we've had excellent people on here. Kyle, if you will, could you tell me about anything that you can think of that really, really scared you even during the time to the years that you knew about the forest people and doing research during that thing scary that you can... Hello?
Yeah, you there? I lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay. I should...
You can hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Could you tell me a little bit about anything, incidents, years into your research scared you? Any close encounters that you wouldn't want to repeat?
Well, I have one of those, and I'm going to tell you, to this day, it wakes me up in the middle of the night. It really does. I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, these situations where they say they got zapped, what they call getting zapped or whatever. Well,
yeah,
we were out on the Colville Indian Reservation, and I was in my boat, and I knew they were up in this area because I've been listening to them for about a year up there. And so I'd go up there and, you know, I'd put my anchor down and go into this mountain cove on the reservation and listen to them. And so I decided that I wanted to see if I could get a response. So I decided to take Tom Moorhead's CD and put it in my boat
mm-hmm.
speakers, because I have one of those big loud speakers. It's about 1,000 watts, and I have the wakeboard tower, you know, with the big speakers. And so I put that Tom Moorhead CD in there, and I played it. And the first week, it really didn't get a whole lot. I played it and just kind of played it to see if we could get some kind of response. Well, the next week I came back. And I decided, well, I'm going to try it again. So I tried it. I put the CD in there and started making those jabbering noises that it does on that CD. And then, sure enough, I got a call back. And I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we both looked at each other. Did you just hear that? And you know, kind of looked at each other like, wow. And it sounded just like what Tom had on his CD. And so we kept playing it, and it kept calling back. And so then I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm going to go jump in this lake here, go over to shore, and I'm going to put my shoes back on, and I'm going to hike up this ravine and see how close I can get to him. And she's like, oh, that's not a good idea. Are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I really want to see if I can sneak up there. I want to see where that call's coming from. So she's in her boat. She's got her binoculars on, and she's watching the whole hillside. And I swim over to shore, and I could hear it. And then I start hiking up the hill a little ways, and I look back at my wife, and she's jumping up and down with her arms swinging around and everything. And she's kind of yelling at me. She says to me, get back here. he's coming down the hill, and I can see him. I just saw him. You need to get to the boat. And I turned around and I kind of did that, be quiet. I'm trying to sneak up on this thing. And so I come up a little bit further, and there's this big, giant granite rock. And the thing jumped out. He jumped out behind the rock, and it screamed at me. And I'm going to tell you something. That scream, it's really hard to tell people, you know, you can get screamed at by a bear or a cougar or whatever animal you get screamed at, but it's really hard to explain the power that came out of this scream, because this power, all I could do is I turned around to make a run to the water. I wanted nothing. When that power hit me, it literally froze me up. I mean, I could not move a muscle in my body. I had all of a sudden, I am froze. It's like going under surgery, that's how I'd say it. But when this fear hit me, I was turned towards the water. My back was turned towards it. And I'll never forget, because it was the most awful feeling in the world, because you want to move, but you can't. You can't move. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, you just feel like, it almost feels like your soul inside your body. It feels like you're putting a mask over your head, like somebody's kidnapped you and somebody put a mask over you to put you in a car to take you away. That's what I felt. I felt the most horrible feeling in the world. And it froze me for a good, I'd say, at least a minute. And once my muscles let go, once it let go of me, it let go of me when it wanted to let go of me. And once it let go of me and I ran towards the lake and got in the water, I'd never swam so fast in my life. I didn't think I could ever move like that. And I got in that boat.
I started moving and the spoon was going out back behind you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, And I'll tell you what, I got back to the camper, and I was sick for 2 days. For 2 days, I felt like I'd been in the biggest fight that I've ever been in. I mean, I felt like I was drained of my energy. I had headaches. I was kind of nauseous. I was sick for 2 days.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Being sick for 2 days, do you think it was because you were scared, or do you think this thing stunk you? You didn't realize it.
That's what I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if it was just my nerves, or if it was the fear. I really don't know. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. And I'm telling you what, it makes you not want to go getting too close to them anymore. I'll tell you that. the way it felt and everything, I was thinking that, to me, it almost told me that, hey, you're here and you're here at the wrong time, and you need to turn around and you need to go. That's the feeling I got. It wasn't a feeling that – the feeling that I got was I didn't like not being able to move. That's the feeling that I didn't like. But at the same time, what came over me was like, you're not wanted here. You need to leave.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I've had a lot of special moments, but I think the biggest thing that scared me was my first Apache and that red one to him. And there's a red one back there, Winston Kay, don't go behind the tent. Three gunshots goes off right in the middle of the ground. And you can hear these things are running away. Second most scariest thing I ever had is when I was sleeping at Wendell. And it was a hot summer day, and had the window open. There was a little screen there. My head was coming from the window, and I had been welding all day. All that stuff was going into the forest there, and hearing rocks hitting the barn while I was inside of it. That night at midnight, my wife Carter was sitting at the table. She come over, and jerked me out of bed. And I asked him, I said, what's going on? And there was this huge sasquatch breathing in the window, growling at us, with eye shine, red eye shine. That scared me more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable. You're on private property and you start from a situation, you really get into some scary moments. These gentlemen, but you got to understand, they're still wild. Their gentleness is not the same gentleness we have. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. You know, I believe that they're stuck. They'll either accept you or they won't accept you. And if they don't want you around, they're going to tell you they don't want you around. If they don't mind you being around, they will tolerate that and they will let you be. But it's all on their.
Yeah.
I consider it kind of like
let you know.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, you know they're not like having dogs. Like it's like the difference between having dogs and cats. You know, dogs will come up and you can pet them and everything, and they want your attention. Well, the cats, they make you work for it. If you feed them and you do and you don't harm them and you let them live and let them be, they come up and respect you. If not, they don't want nothing to do with you.
Yes. Now, that's one thing I learned. Don't want to feed them on a regular basis. Now, I'll leave a package of crackers there once every week or so and walk away. Leave them be.
Yeah.
There it is. It's a gift. Tell them that out loud. It's a gift. Enjoy it. A lot of times I've come back and I found that, hey, they left a gift for me. I find that fascinating. Fascinating.
Well, one thing I've learned though through the years, though, is if you go into those areas and you know that they're in there, you know, you go in there with good intentions and you go out of there and you do natural things. You go on a hike or you go fishing or you do things that are, you know, normal to do when you're outside. But one thing you don't do is bring a bunch of people with you into those areas. And constantly push those areas because they will get up and leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah, you know? Interesting. Yeah, I have to agree with that. You know, I find, on a radio show, they have two or three people talking about their experiences and how similar a lot of them are about 4 feet. Even though we're in different locations, different states, what have you, that similarity always there. You know, I mean, it's fascinating. But at the same time, each clan is different in each area.
Yep.
But you know, but we still have a lot of similarities. And you know, we're never in control. You always do things on their terms. Always.
That's right.
On their
always. Yep. If you go out there and you just look and look and look all the time, you're never going to find anything. You won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I always let them have control. You're going to take it anyway, whether you know it or not.
Right.
I find that... I just basically go out and be among them and let them find me. And
yep.
First thing I do when I go to a camp out, I tell them, before anybody else gets there, I'll tell them, we got some newbies coming in tonight. You guys want to have fun? Come on into the campground and scare them. And you know, by God, they have done that every time that I have had a and, you know, that. I get a big thrill out of that because I already know that either they're not there to hurt or harm, they're there to have fun with them. And
they feel that, you know, with you talking out loud like that into the forest, they know that you're talking to them. They know you're not talking to anybody else. You're out there by yourself, and they're talking into the forest. They're like, well, he does realize that we're here, and he is okay with that.
Yep. But Jeff said something interesting. His best result is when I give thanks to them in nature and say some prayers. You know, I've done that. They love that. They love because you're showing respect.
Yep.
And I always let them, always tell them, you know, thanks for letting me come into your home. And when I leave, I'll come back and I'll bring a gift sign, you know, something, whatever. And, you know, every time I go back, they seem to be around. So, you know, I appreciate that. No. So it works out for everybody. Going out and being among men. Not only that, you're among nature. You know, we've got to be able to learn to enjoy nature. Go out all the time to love wild, you know, the forest or whatever. You know, that's exactly what we're doing. We're going out enjoying ourselves. But you're being among men, you know, they're enjoying you and respecting you through nature.
Yeah.
I find a lot of that fascinating. How the intelligence on these are so fantastic, you just can't comprehend it. Their intelligence
it takes a long time to really figure things out, and then even then, when you think you got it all figured out, that's when they throw a twist in it.
Yep, and then they switch tables on you.
What's really interesting is so curious, though. I mean, like up there on the reservation where we are, you know, we're only about, 500, 600 feet from the boat ramp. And it's funny because when you put your boat in, there's four terraced levels that are, you know, thousands of feet up of basalt, and they got pine trees coming out of them, thick forests coming out of them. So there's these different levels above the lake. But when you're down there putting in your boat and you're taking off, you look up there on those shelves, and you'll see those dark shadows up there by the trees. It's funny, they'll sit up there and they'll watch you get in your boat and they'll watch you take off, and then they'll sit there and wait until you come back off the river, and they'll be up there watching you. And once in a while, it's funny, there's this really big male, and Tom has seen him up there with me, but there's a big male up there that comes out on that first terrace, and he'll stand right next to the tree, and he's huge. I mean, and you can't miss him because he's huge. And he'll walk out there, and he'll just stand there, and he'll look at you when you bring the boat in. He'll watch you for a little bit, and then he'll slip behind the tree, and then he'll go away for a little while, and then he'll come back out. But I'll tell you, what he does is he runs those hills above our place, and he knows when we're coming and when we're going. And they keep an eye on what's going on all around there.
They don't. Let me ask you a question. Jeff had asked. What is a red stripe? Kyle?
Yeah? Oh.
You know what a red stripe is?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Oh,
what about
Dave,
you, Jeff?
I said
you
that.
Something.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You had a question mark behind it.
Yeah, I was just asking if that was red stripe. Red stripe is what Tom Cantrell calls his teacher. Sasquatch, male Sasquatch teacher.
Okay.
So I was wondering if Kyle was referring to him.
I'm not sure who that is. I just know that I know it's big and it's a dark color, but I don't know. I've never asked Tom too much about that. I know I've talked to Tom about his teacher, and he's told me about his teacher and stuff, but as far as if that's his teacher, I'm not sure.
Okay, gotcha. Just wondered.
Gee, that was fun, guys.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Kyle, during the time that you have done all this, what are your future plans? Are you just going to continue doing what you're doing, or do you really want to ramp up and really get involved in this?
I'm gonna really get involved in this, but I'm getting involved in this for my own. This is all for my own learning. I just want to learn. I want to know more about them, and my goal is to get on a level to where I can, you know, I like keep communicating with them, but get to have a closer relationship with them. That's basically what I'm going for.
Yes, I totally agree.
because I think there's a lot to learn.
Have you ever communicated with them in any means?
Yeah, they communicated with me. They told me one morning to go to Bagby Hot Springs, or I guess it was them. A voice in my head said, go to Bagby Hot Springs. And so I went, and that's where I found my first track. And a lot of epic things that happened in that camp nearby that I set up. It's called Camp Broken Arrow. Tom Cantrell talks about it a bit. And anyway, for them to speak to me directly, I don't know.
Keep
coming in and out. I got a bad connection here.
Yeah. What about you, Carl? Have you ever run across the energy mind? Have you ever run across
that? Yeah, I had something really incredible happen to me a couple years ago. I had a friend that I grew up with. He used to hunt with, at least to live out here with me. And I hadn't heard from this guy for probably 15, 20 years. He called me up out of the blue one day, told me about him and his daughter had had a sighting. And they're up in the Colville Indian Wilderness area, just up above Kettle Falls. And he called me up, and so it was really strange because I'd never seen this guy in 20 years, and I didn't know where I was going. But sometime before that call that he called me, one morning about 3 o'clock in the morning, I got woke up. And for some reason, I got in my truck, and I drove for 3.5 hours to this spot up above Kettle Falls called Dead Man's Creek. I'd never been up in that area ever in my life. I just got in my truck. For some reason, something told me, you just need to take a drive. You need to go into these woods. I've never been there. I don't even know. So I follow this road. It leads me to this place called Dead Man's Creek, and I'd never been there, never even heard of it. Beautiful area. I drive all the way up the mountain, and I come to this trailhead. And for some reason, I stopped the truck, and I don't know why I'm doing this, because I wasn't planning on going anywhere that day. You know, I was planning on being in my camper. This is 3.5 hours away from my camper.
Yeah.
I get out on this trailhead, and I walk up this beautiful trailhead. And I go up there, and I'd never been up there. And I came back and went back to the camper. And then quite a few months later, that's when my friend called me and asked me to meet him at this gas station. He wanted to show me where him and his daughter had a sighting. And it was the strangest thing because I parked my truck at this gas station. I got in his truck with him. I went to this place, and it was exact trailhead that I'd went to months before.
Amazing.
And that just blew my mind. I was like, I even told him, I said, man, I have been here before, and I don't know how. It just, I'll tell you what, it was something.
That's fantastic. That's a great story. I like that.
Yep,
I was always skeptical about that kind of stuff, and then it happened to me. And then from then on, it just continues. It's stronger and stronger, and it develops that gift that man has lost, if you will. And that's
right.
When you really begin to start feeling them. You can go to about any area and start, you can feel them, you know.
Yep, that's what I've noticed, too, is I can go into an area, and as soon as I step out of my vehicle and get into the woods a little bit, I can either I'll feel that they're around, or either they'll be around or they won't be around. But I'll know.
Yep.
But I will know.
Yep. But
there's a certain,
I find that
you get a certain energy. It's kind of almost like an adrenaline rush a little bit. I consider it.
Yeah.
It's a great.
There's,
all of a sudden you get this great feeling. Yeah.
It's just like a large predator that they always put off an energy, if you will.
Yep.
You can't see them. You can't. You know you're being watched. Like them releasing ions in the air. You feel that changes around you. You start getting that tingling feeling. Like, you know, the hairs on your arms are raised and the hair on the back of your head. Heck, yeah, raised. I don't have any hair on my head raised, so I don't worry about that. You know, but, hey, yeah, you guys are absolutely right. Both of you have experienced quite a lot, you know. And it's, like I said, I know you've met, you know, Kennewick, we've all three have talked and everything. And it's amazing how fans in different areas feel the same thing. You get these experiences and you tell somebody. That's with somebody that's had the same experience. Because, listen, there's nobody else out there in the human population that either cares or they believe you. You know, most of them think we're nuts anyway.
Yep.
And that's fine, because maybe I am nuts.
the way I look at it is, maybe it's better off that way. Maybe it's safer for them too.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. You know, I really don't worry about that kind of stuff anymore, because you've got to have tough skin when you're in the street. And if you don't,
right,
you better get out.
Oh yeah.
You know. And you know, we've all three of us have learned to do that. You've got to have tough skin.
There's people that have spent a lot of money and a lot of time, and they're very...
Oh, my God, yes.
You know, yeah.
A lot of time. And, you know, you're going to have a lot of heartache. Climbing the mountains, down in Tennessee, and, you know, it's something else. I always ride in gadgets with me, you know. I don't believe it. I don't need it. You know, let communicate with you. They'll enter your mind if they want to. And it, again, it's the open heart, an open mind, lose the total fear, and show great respect. I think that's the secret. That's the ticket.
Yeah,
guys, we're listening to that about summer tennis. I want to ask Kyle, if you will, could you tell us a little bit about your website and link to it? People can look at what you're doing.
Well, I have a Facebook page called Columbia Sasquatch, and basically it's just I post a lot of good articles that I've seen from different people and stuff that's related to early humans and you know, a lot of pictures of the area that I research, and I just post a lot of stuff on there for people to look at and good information. If I see a good article, I'll put it on there.
Cool.
But yeah,
that's cool. What about you, Jeff? Do you have a site or do you anything?
Nope, I don't have any websites. I don't say too much on my Facebook page either, but I have a tight network of people that I associate with, and we just all share. And any time you guys are in town here, you're welcome to come out and stay at my place and share stories and share experiences and go out in the woods.
Sure, that sounds great. Of course, I'm
semi-retired
now. I can't get out, but I do have a web page called Kachi. It's a secret organization. And if people want to learn, they can always, I'm glad to put them on, you know. Well, guys, listen, we're down to 50. I'm going to say goodnight to two of you. It's been a great pleasure for having both of you on tonight. And we're going to have to do this again.
Definitely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You thank too, Jack. Thank you, Stephen Kyle. Yeah, thank you, Stephen Kyle, for letting me pop on here. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, say good evening to you, and pop the evening to you, gentlemen.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You too. Bye.